are live on Blog Talk Radio for The Game Plan. I'm your host, Jeremy the Impact York. Welcome in. Happy Wednesday. We kept this show as true to Wednesday as we could. Basically, this show is going to wrap up everything Georgia State. We are going to wrap up all of our Kennesaw stuff next Wednesday. We have some special guests there. We have two loaded guests here today, including the man who is currently on our guest line. I want to bring him straight on right now from 24/7 Sports and GSUPantherTalk.com. He is Ben Moore. How you doing, Ben?
Hey, I'm great, man. It's been a long but busy day, and certainly eventful here with the early signing period opening up. But definitely a good day for the Panthers for sure.
Oh yeah, it is almost you could almost say most of the month of December has been full of a lot of good days to be GSU Panthers. Can we not?
No question. I mean, it started last weekend, certainly in the Auto Nation Cure Bowl, getting the first bowl win in program history, and a statement win, quite honestly, something that this program desperately needed. And now to kind of pivot from that to lock in 16 commitments and signees today, huge numbers of guys signing across the country. But, you know, Georgia State certainly had a lot of needs that they need to replace from that field on Saturday, and keep the momentum going, and looking forward to what January brings, and then certainly their traditional signing period in February. But yeah, definitely been a great few days for the Panthers.
Oh, absolutely, and that graphic that's been passed around, I know I passed it around as well. A lot of firsts on this first year staff. You got most wins in the program history, like you said, the first bowl victory, like you said, first winning season as an FBS program, most road victories with 6. On the defense, the first shutout in school history, the fewest points per game allowed, which is crazy because that Jesse Bender defense was no joke either a couple years ago. Fewest rushing yards per game allowed, most sacks in a game, 7, and most in a season, 24. The offense, highest completion percentage, fewest interceptions in a season, school record, 670 yards of total offense and 47 points. The most ever against an FBS opponent. I mean, there's probably more than that. I think they just ran out of room on the poster.
Yeah, it was definitely a spectacular year from that side of things. And we came into the season knowing the defense was going to be good, and with so many returning guys on that side of the ball, it was important for them to continue to progress. And I think there were some bumps, dealing with Nate Fuquay's defense, moving to it from a zone, from a man-to-man bump scheme to a zone scheme. But things have got ironed out, and credit to the coaching staff. Certainly on Saturday, the game plan on both sides of the ball was. Very good, very aggressive, and they dominated Western Kentucky from almost the beginning.
Oh, yeah, and I'll say this a little bit later in the show as well when our second guest, Mike Sigmund, who I actually met, and he covered Western Kentucky down at the Cure Bowl. But we saw the team come from the locker room pregame to come out for the start of the game, and we saw them coming out of halftime, coming into the third quarter. And both times I looked and I said, there's the winners right there. Look how they carry themselves. Look at this confidence. They're walking out like they're the 300 warriors about to take on 100,000 Spartans, or however the story goes. I don't know that I've ever seen this team that prepared, and I don't want to say that in a derogatory term to anybody else who's been here beforehand, but Coach Elliott had them ready to go.
Yeah, I think both emotionally, and then in the preparation X's and O's, they pretty much knew what Western Kentucky was going to do. If not for kind of one, just goofy kind of awful fumble there by Connor Manning, he had a spectacular game, and it was a scenario where I think it was probably his best game overall he's played probably since the Wisconsin game on the road a couple of years ago. So it was good to for the team to remain poised. Come out and continue to play well, and execute and again get the win in really dominant fashion. You were up basically 3 scores in this game in the fourth quarter, that's again another building block, another brick into the wall there of the 8-year-old program.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And let's get into more of the regular season of this team. I kind of went over some of it last week, just my overall takes. What did you gather from this season, and what do you think maybe were some of the pivotal points or the turning points for this team?
Yeah, it's it was it was disappointing to come out and lose to an FCS opponent. That was something that everything around the stadium and new stadium, George State Stadium opening with pomp and circumstance, and certainly going into a bye week the following week with that resounding loss, going over to Penn State and just absolutely getting the brakes beat off of you in a pay game there, and just, in kind of insult to injury there, James Franklin calling the timeout at the very end to ice Brandon Wright to make sure he doesn't kick the field goal. And of course he misses it. I think from that point, that pivot point, you saw Coach Elliott almost, rally the troops there specifically. I wanted to really, really see the mindset going back on the road to a Charlotte team that was pretty fragile. And the Panthers were favored in that game. And it was one of those scenarios too. Okay, you're going to come out and be defeated. You lost two out of your last three. How are you going to react to that? And they locked it in and produced the first shutout in history, in the program's history. And then comes the news, during that same week, hey, by the way, that Memphis game that you thought was going to come back home is going to get canceled and get removed off the schedule, presenting yet another bye week. But I think the coaching staff used that to really, really drill down and find out which, what options they wanted to play. And you start to see some of the younger guys play. You start seeing guys like Tamir Jones, guys like Dante Wilson on the defensive line, Victor Haywood, guys that had, were brought in that 2017 class by Coach Elliott and his staff. We started really, really get established. Roger Carter, coming in. And quite frankly, from that point on, they won the games they're supposed to win. The games that they were lesser teams. I thought the beginning of the season, six wins was probably the ceiling here, just based on the schedule, knowing how tough Troy and App State were going to be. Georgia Southern game being a flip, coin flip game potentially because it's a rivalry game. It's also on the road. That was a very quality win. Down there against a team that certainly was dying on the vine, had fired their coach a week earlier, but still a rivalry game. A ton of kids from Georgia, a ton of these guys know each other. They know how much that game means. And just the important, the important comebacks. You saw in the past this program get in tight situations and fold up. And you saw multiple times this year that guys made plays on both sides of the ball and even on special teams. To really rally and get victories, and that was the impressive thing for me, just the grittiness and determination of this team. The talent is not where Coach Elliott wanted it, and I think you're starting to see that certainly moving forward and so far in recruiting. But that's a credit to the staff utilizing what they had, and I think it's also a credit to the players and returning players for buying into what was going on. Overall, again, a very good year, a statement year, and something, quite frankly, that establishes the new floor of this program. It's certainly not the ceiling. The bowl game is the expectation. Trent Miles said that 3 years ago. We were sitting down in the Cure Bowl saying, look, this program is going to continue to go back to Cure, to bowl games and continue to, compete for conference championships. 6-7 wins is no longer, hey, that's wonderful. Everyone, hand out rings and trophies and things like that. That's the expectation to exceed that and really, make a run at App State and Troy in 2018.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned his name. It's crazy that not only Georgia State, but Kennesaw State that we cover here as well, both have a active linebacker freshman. It seems to just not only be emerging, but they might be the early front runners to lead these defenses next year. At Kennesaw, they got Bryson Armstrong as his name. And then here, Victor Haywood. When I asked Coach, I believe after the Idaho game, about what Victor Haywood has meant, like his emergence, especially here late in the season, he lit up like a Christmas tree and said, boy, that guy can play, can he? And I get him for three more years. So who knows what he's going to do?
Yeah, and comes from a great program, Mill Creek. They're consistently well coached there up in Gwinnett, and his younger brother actually signed with Duke today, and so congratulations to his family. But just a really, really smart kid, made plays on special teams, came in the rotation this year as well. The linebacker was a very deep group: Michael Shaw, Trey Payne, Ed Kearney, those guys. There's a ton of guys that play reps, but he just kept practicing, working hard, and really finding his way onto the field, getting reps and making the most of his reps. And that's been the most impressive thing to me, about several members of that 17 class. And then you have a ton more who are still sitting out. This now becomes their opportunity here, coming quickly in spring.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And we're talking with Ben Moore from 24/7 Sports and GSUPantherTalk.com. I guess the simple question at this point is, you kind of hit on it a little bit, but what's next for this program? I mean, like you said, clearly we've made it to the floor of the next chapter, basically.
Yeah, the biggest thing is you look at the roster and the way, who you lose and who's coming back. I think that's kind of the start. You have eight guys who have started games on offense coming back. You have to replace Connor Manning, and that's why I think it was so critical to go out and get junior college player. Yesterday was named junior college All-American in Dan Ellington out of Ottawa Community College, and he'll come in and compete right away. You've got freshman Jack Walker who redshirted last year, who followed offensive coordinator Travis Trickett from. He was previously committed to Florida Atlantic, had come in and took a redshirt this year, and from all reports, gained strength, gained muscle. He looks the part getting off the bus. He's about 6'2", 6'3", about 210 pounds. Really has a really good arm, very, very accurate, and has run the scout team all fall and looked good doing it. Then you have old Sticks, is what I call him, Aaron Winchester, number 11, has been here. Ho-hum, this will be his fourth spring that he'll be going through. As a redshirt junior. So he's got an opportunity to certainly, get an opportunity to play. And I think that's the biggest thing Coach Elliott wants to see at every single position is just competition. But, defensively, there's a ton of guys that, that have played and have started. McKinney Cheridor, who had a dominant performance in the Cure Bowl, certainly Chandon Sullivan, got to replace him. Brian Williams, who feels like he's been around since the school was founded in 1913. But I'd love B-Dub to death, glad he went out in his home state for sure. But you can't replace that level of experience being in the right place at the right time. But you have talented safeties. Now, that was a big need in the 2017 class, and they addressed it with three guys who all redshirted. And that's the interesting part about how do those guys develop now that they have the opportunity for reps. So the competition at every single position, I think it's important to see that. Going in and improving the running back depth, they addressed that today, reaching down to Florida, grabbing Dawson Hill out of Plantation, Florida, who may have the opportunity to start as a freshman running back, which would be certainly a first since the FCS days. And then the wide receiver core just gets loaded up. I mean, you got Penny coming back, who's healthy, who will hopefully be healthy certainly next fall. And you saw his impact. And what's interesting to me is you add significant size in the wide receiver core. You got Cam Johnson, who's 6'4". Christian Owens, who's a South Carolina transfer, sat out this year. He's another 6'3 guy. DeAndre Champagne, who signed today as a junior college ranks, another 6'3", 195-pound guy. Really, really tall guys, athletic guys, jump ball guys, all the way across the board to mix Penny in and Tamir Jones and Roger Carter and Ari. And I probably could go on and on and on. They're going to have weapons. Whoever this quarterback that wins that battle is going to have weapons to throw to. They're going to have an experienced offensive line. And, they're going to have guys that can really go get it. So that's the fun part. I think you're going to start seeing the evolution of this offense. Travis Trickett is very much kind of in the family tree, Chad Morris, Gus Malzahn, speed you up and really put a whole lot of points on you. It's not too terribly off from what Lane Kiffin ran last night. If anybody watched the Boca Raton Bowl with Florida Atlantic, they want to score a ton of points. They want to wear you out, and they want to score quickly. That obviously, you have to have a trigger man to do that. You got to have somebody that throws the ball out there. You got to have guys to catch it, and certainly running backs that can run it. So it's going to be fun to watch. I think spring is going to be extremely interesting. There's going to be a ton of position battles and guys that want playing time. But I know they'll be excited. Five more spots as it stands right now in the 2018 class, and they'll be looking to address those and certainly pivot from there. But it's going to be fun to watch. Of course, all the games that you've had at home will flip, so you go on the road to App State, which will be difficult. Troy on the road, they play Georgia Southern at home, and then open up against Kennesaw State in their run. So there's certainly some intrigue to the 2018 schedule, but thankfully we have nine and a half months until that time, and they'll get prepared for that.
Yeah, don't blink or we'll be a month away, because the way it usually goes. No, I want to say something on Jack Walker real quick. I thought he looked good in the spring game before. Connor Manning has pretty much been they joke that it's the father-son relationship when they go on the road, but Connor Manning has taken him under his wing, and I think that's only going to make Jack that much better, because Connor's going to be able to show him what kind of stuff to expect, especially in this program. But I didn't realize that we stole him from Lane Kiffin.
Yeah, he was committed to FAU, wanted to go down there, had committed down there, and then Lane basically brought in DeAndre Johnson, who had been at East Mississippi Community College as well, was going to be there. Jack, followed Trickett in and came to Georgia State. His dad comes from a football lineage as well. Dad played offensive line at Mississippi State, just a really smart kid, yes or no sir kid. Not a whole lot pomp and circumstance. Just like Connor. I think Connor's not really a rah-rah guy,
right,
in-your-face guy, more laid back. But, it's going to be interesting to see what happens, like I said, in the spring, see what kind of, the next steps once you get Dan Ellington on campus and, again, have a position battle up and down the roster and see what comes loose and what shakes loose and where they go. Both of these guys are tricky recruits. And, typically when you bring in junior college players, you want them to play right away. But who's to say, hey, Jack Walker's been in the system for a whole year practicing. He should be ahead terminology-wise. So hey, can we put it all together, get the mindset in there, and gentlemen, battle it out and see who's better.
And especially, it's crazy how this lined up. I've been talking about doing a season wrap-up, having you back on and everything, and you said, Wednesday's going to be great because we did sign, 16 today, and shout-out to probably one of the best cogs in the wheel that is Georgia State program and everything. And Allison George, she dropped this little nugget of the whole list of them right in front of me. You probably have the list, but we talked a little bit about Dan Ellington. You said DeAndre and some of these other ones. Let's talk a little bit about some of these other ones. Do you know a whole lot about, I'm going to try to pronounce this. I know his last name's Alexander. I'm going to say Despolato
Alexandre, indeed. Yeah, from Deerfield Beach, big offensive tackle. Him and his teammate, Cornelius McCoy, both signed. They both come as weren't necessarily a package deal, but they committed at different times. But McCoy's a big-time deep threat and really somebody that I think can be a tandem guy with Penny that can really, really get out in space. Guy that had about 20 offers, biggest Purdue and Iowa State, Colorado State, all the way down, chose Georgia State. Despolato's been a guy that, I think folks have been worried about a little bit. Tulane was after him late, tried to get him that last official visit weekend, tried to bring him up. Instead, the coaching staff did a really good job reeling him in and not getting him on the plane to New Orleans, to steal him away. But that's the important part about it. And I think Coach Elliott even mentioned it this afternoon in his press conference, just getting better along the line of scrimmage. You are both on the offensive line and defensive line. Got a ton of defensive linemen in this class shaping up so far. Reached into Virginia and grabbed Akeem Smith, a poor man's Warren Sapp. Guy that's super, super duper active on the defensive tackle, nose guard, just really, really hard to block, slippery in space, can really, really move. And then you've got some defensive ends out of Louisiana, and Marlon Young, who's just super productive guy, quick twitch guy. Then they reached up to North Carolina and grabbed TJ Smith. But both these guys, again, have double-digit sacks as seniors, really, really, active guys off the line of scrimmage. And I think that's the really – thing they looked at is finding super productive guys, a lot of these guys played in the high school playoffs in their respective states as well, and really reached out to the entire Southeast to try to find the best fit for them and finding guys in this class to really apply some pressure. And it's also a defensive backfield heavy class. Tyler Gore is a guy out of North Myrtle Beach who will be enrolling early, which is important as a high school guy. Get in here and get an opportunity to play right away. He's a special teams guy that they can really affect the game, kick return, punt return, and a guy that has not quite signed yet. He's looking to sign probably in the next 24 to 48 hours before the signing period is over. Quay White out of Greer High School. Played in the North and South Carolina All-Star game put up 172 all-purpose yards, basically all on returns. And he absolutely is a guy. It will be a kick return and punt return here as well. So, again, another area where you improve special teams with his addition. And I think it's going to be, again, all-out battle. And Coach Elliott has already proved if you're good enough as a freshman, you'll play. So that's something that they can put in front of these guys who have signed today and who will sign, as well in February, saying, hey, you have the opportunity to go ahead and get on the field very early in your career.
And this is what I like, too, is I've been looking over this list and looking into a little bit of I was able to look into some of these guys because thanks to people, amazing people like you and a few others, I kind of had a few of them in mind. They were already going to sign or going to be a part of it. But I like that not only is it all over the Southeast, but there's a lot of local guys here and a lot of people with ties to Atlanta anyway. Jonathan Bass out of Kell High School in Marietta. That dude is – from what I hear, he is a monster on the offensive line, and he all but dares you to try to get past him. You look at Ja'Cory Crawford out of Thomaston. It's good to keep these guys local.
Yeah, no question. Ja'Cory's a guy that's another early enrollee. He'll be moving in on January the 6th, going and participating in spring practice and as well. We had him listed initially in the system as corner, but he moved to the back third to play safety. And bulked up to about 205 pounds. Very, very physical guy that can really, really stick you and hit you in the backfield. And I think that's something they look forward to as well. In the past, we saw 190-pound, 195-pound safeties. Now you're going to be looking at safeties that are 205, 210, 215 pounds. Even DeAndre Applin was close to 220 this year coming from Georgia Military last year. So he'll have another year in the system as well. It's going to be a battle back there in the safety position. But I agree. I firmly believe there'll be more Georgia players in this class. And we got that question brought up. Hey, there's only, a few signees from Georgia. Well, this, part of it as well, with this early signing period, a lot of the Georgia guys were waiting and seeing and really were kind of sitting on the sidelines and the spots got filled. They had been through, they had heard Georgia State before. They've seen the struggle certainly and kind of waiting and, either they went elsewhere or they may still be waiting out there. I'm not quite sure, but I know there's some other guys that have reached out and see, if there's still, openings at certain positions from the Metro Atlanta area. That's going to have a difficult challenge on their hands because you can only sign 25. I know as well, because of the bowl success and having a winning season this year, there'll be folks from around the country that look at that and say, hey, maybe I want to bounce back. Maybe I want to head back to where I went to high school. For example, come back to the Atlanta area. That's certainly a position as well. But though, again, you can only sign so many guys, and the staff has to has the tough job of weeding through those guys and figure out who's the best fit for their program.
Yeah, and just to get everybody's name in case any of them are listening or any of their families, I don't want to make any mamas or grandmas mad at us or anything. I want to make sure to get everybody in here. Let's see. You had Blake Carroll, the linebacker out of Lawrenceville. You had, I think we mentioned Dawson Hill out of Plantation, Florida. You had Brandon Joseph, the offensive lineman out of Lawrenceville, another local guy. D'Angelo Knight, the linebacker out of North Charleston, South Carolina. Herman McCray, the tight end. Boy, that tight end group may be loaded. Big kid out of West Palm Beach, Florida. Trey Moore, the defensive end out of Johnson, South Carolina. And I think Marlon Young was the other one out of I think you mentioned him out of Louisiana. But I want to make sure to get everybody's name in, make sure everybody gets equal play here. But just from what you've said and what little bit I've been able to dig in and other things about this kid, about these kids, I guess, man, I'm excited. And usually I don't get excited about signing days. And honestly, after the first round of a NFL draft, I'm not all that excited usually. But I'm excited by these kids getting on campus.
Yeah, you mentioned it a little bit earlier about the tight end group. There's so many versatile weapons and so many guys that can do a multitude of things, and just the sheer talent level that just jumps in a huge way on this roster. You're going to see that in just the size and skill level from the Panthers and what they signed. With this class, there's so much versatility. There's guys that have played wide receiver and defensive back. In their high school ranks that are coming in that's the important part too, to grow and hit the field on special teams. I think you're going to see that continue to progress, continue to grow, And again, credit to Coach Elliott and his staff for locking in at this point the best class that Georgia State has ever signed. And again, you have spots left. We mentioned Quay White, who could sign as early as tomorrow, and then several other guys that are committed who could sign basically in February. And then again, you've got five more spots on top of that. So the class could absolutely improve, and I expect it to improve with the word getting out there and the positive momentum, as the brand continues to collect. And yeah, I think the excitement level will be palpable. Folks will be super excited to see what these guys can do on the field. And I think year two in Georgia State Stadium, being able to launch that and seeing what this coaching staff can do. I think there's some folks that had questions about Coach Elliott coming in from South Carolina. I think he's answered every single one of those, both on the field and off the field. And it's something that it will continue to kind of get folks excited and get them coming to the program. And quite honestly, they just this program has struggled with fan support and struggled with support in general. But Coach Elliott certainly makes you a believer of what they've got going on.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And as we finish up here with Ben Moore from 24/7 Sports and, of course, GSUPantherTalk.com, you mentioned it before. It's the one game that we absolutely know. I don't know that we know a date and we know a location and we know it's the first game off the docket. I don't think we exactly know if it's a midday or a evening game. My guess is it's probably about a 2:05 start. But we know that the Kennesaw State Owls are going to come visit the Georgia State Panthers next year. And just what's your quick preview of that? Because I was able to follow both these teams. I know a little bit about both teams. I think this is a very intriguing matchup, given who they've already signed on both sides too, and knowing what I know about these about the schools and the coaching staffs. This is going to be – if you're looking for a game to go to next year to check out either one of these teams, this is the one to go to.
Yeah, and it will certainly have some eyeballs locally, and the game's set for August 30th. And I think, what will be intriguing is to see, how Kennesaw State deals with the prosperity. I think that's a big portion as well. Mm-hmm. They've won at a level they've never won before. With that, sometimes comes folks coming to grab your assistant coaches and things like that, which can be tough. But you have a style of offense that is not something Georgia State sees every single day. But I think that it has done very, very well, certainly against the run. I expect that to continue to progress. And quite honestly, as I continue to say, and this is not a knock to Kennesaw or any other FCS program, FBS programs are supposed to beat FCS teams. They get paid to be brought in and get paid to get beat. That's what the expectation should be. But there's a lot of factors, certainly with Kennesaw's growing experience and so many players coming back from their offensive and defensive side of things. I think it's going to have some intrigue. There's going to be a lot of Kennesaw State fans that show up at Georgia State Stadium expecting to win. It's going to be up to Georgia State to exactly. And fans are going to fan and be excited, and that's awesome. It's going to be one of those scenarios too where I think ultimately – it's going to be a depth thing. It's going to be, a talent thing. And, the great equalizer was turnovers. So we saw in the Tennessee State game and the Idaho game. But if this game is played even, I expect Georgia State to win and win by double digits. So, we'll see. That's, again, got 9 months to look at that film and see what they're going to do. The coaching staff stays the exact same. Then you pretty much know what offense they're going to run. You're going to know what defense they're going to run. They run a 4-2-5. Which is pretty good against the spread, but also can limit you a little bit against the run. If the Panthers can run the ball, they should be able to take care of business with no problem in August.
Ben, it's been great getting to catch up. We'll definitely during the holiday season, we'll have to find some time to maybe go have a burger somewhere. But always great to talk to you. Happy holidays and all that applies, and happy new year. We will see you on the other side of December.
That sounds great, man. Thanks to same to you and yours, and thanks for having me as always.
We'll see you later down the road. And that was Ben Moore from 24/7 Sports, and as always, GSUPantherTalk.com, always on top of recruiting. And that's part of why I like having him on. He tells me about the guys that I need to know about. But I see our next guest is already on the line. So without further ado, I want to bring him on. He is from WBLZ and also the Pro Sports Room podcast that you can find anywhere you can download a podcast. He is Mike Sigmund. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing good, Jeremy. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good. Got the bearings back. I'm used to being back in town and already missing that 70-degree weather because it rained all day here.
Yeah, I heard that you guys had all the rain, so I'm not looking forward to it because that means it's coming down to us next. So us Floridians don't like that cold.
We will gladly pass that to somebody. And if it's unfortunately you guys, then we'll apologize ahead of time. But we've had enough of all the moisture we can have around here lately.
I can only imagine.
But, we actually, for people who don't know, me and Mike ended up sitting next to each other in the media booth at the Cure Bowl. So I wanted to bring him on because he covers Western Kentucky and in Conference USA, correct?
Yes, sir.
He covers them for – what is the name of the – I want to make sure to get that right. What's the name of the publication you write for?
WBLZ Media.
Okay, WBLZ Media. I made sure I had that right. I like getting all the names right and everything else. But, yeah, we had a pretty good time. He was my accomplice, a.k.a. The photographer, when we we won't say exactly how we got it done, but we were able to talk to the old ball coach and snap that picture and got out before – the kitchen got too hot, but no, it was fun getting to hang out and it was good meeting you and everything. And let's talk about Western Kentucky for a second. A lot of people thought they were going to win more games this year, but you know, a lot of people thought Georgia State was too. It just certain things happen. Sometimes you get the ups, the downs and stuff and the things that happen during a football season. How did you see the Hilltoppers season kind of play out?
It was so much of an emotional wreck, as I would claim it as, with Jeff Brom leaving last year after only being there for such a short amount of time. Western Kentucky has gone through head coaches, you know, over the last 10 years. They've had a new head coach almost once every other 2 years, you know, starting out with Willie Taggart and, you know, just adding from the list from there. It's kind of like, oh, man, when are we finally going to get a coach that's just going to be able to stay here for a decent amount of time and be able to produce winning seasons? And I know with the first season head coach coming in, most head coaches, they want to come in and they're like, hey, look, this is how we're going to run the offense. This is how we're going to run the defense. This is how it's going to be. And that didn't mesh well with this team this season. After putting up amazing numbers last year and winning the conference last year, going from 10-2 to 6-6 is a big letdown for all the fans and anybody who was watching, especially after Mike White was putting up Heisman numbers last year and people were actually expecting to have that talk of him being able to be some type of Heisman, not front runner, but Heisman, you know, nominee potential.
Yeah. But in the conversation.
Right, but after, I mean, as you said, you know, earlier in the bowl game when we were sitting by each other, if the two of us were to explain the team without saying the team name, like you said, we're probably talking about the same team, a team that loves to throw the ball, you know, has a hard time running the ball, but, I mean, you saw it at the Cure Bowl and so did I. I saw a team that came out and was able to throw the ball and run the ball in Georgia State, and Western Kentucky just couldn't figure out how to run the ball. And that's, I guess that's like the upsetting part of the season, is that knowing that was the biggest issue on the team and it wasn't able to be fixed throughout the 13 games of the season this year.
Yeah, it's honestly eerie how I'm going to throw out the sack numbers because that's the only one that's not that way. If I told you that one of these two quarterbacks during the Cure Bowl was 17 for 25 for 201 yards, one touchdown, including the longest being a 54-yarder, would you know which quarterback that is?
No. I would think that it would be Mike White.
It is Mike White. But here's the difference. You look over at Connor Manning on Georgia State side, instead of 17 for 25, he was 16 for 23. Instead of 201 yards, it was 219 yards. They both threw for one touchdown. Connor's longest was a 49, and Mike's was a 54. It's it really was crazy. It's like watching yourself play yourself in a mirror, the way this all worked. It's just, like you said, for some reason we were able to our running game has evolved a little bit this year. We were able to find some space there. And like I mentioned to you at the game, and I mentioned to Ben a minute ago, we watched this Georgia State team come out of the locker room for the first quarter and for the third quarter. And this bravado confidence they had, they reminded me of the 300 that was about to take on, what is it, the 100,000 Spartans or whatever. I looked at you and I said, unfortunately, I don't think you guys are going to win. I think the winning team's walking right here. They look like, you know, people, you're going to have to kill us and drag us off before you can beat us.
100%, because even after, I mean, we saw it, we were like, oh, okay, here's Western Kentucky. They're starting to build a drive. They're going to have the chance to go up into halftime 17-10 and have that momentum with them. But then that was when Brandon Wright dropped back, tried to make a play, was strip sacked and ran back and put Georgia State ultimately in red zone area. And Georgia State was able to go into the halftime with the 13-10 lead and had all the momentum going with them to be able to change the entire game around.
Exactly.
And I think the worst part about Western Kentucky is that, I mean, I personally do not like adding sacks towards the rushing yards. But in this, you know, stat sheet that I have, they added it. But including sacks, if I were to tell you that Western Kentucky rushed the ball 21 times and they only got 2 yards of rushing for the entire game. Now, if you take out the 45, that's obviously, you know, the 45 yards from Mike White from being sacked 6 times, that averages out to 47 yards off of 15 carries. That's not good at all, especially when, you know, your average carries are 7, 3, and 5. You got to run the ball. I feel like the best way for that offense to have been able to succeed is to run the ball and run off the play action. And it was crazy to see that. I was telling you, this is what Western Kentucky needs to do to win the game, and Georgia State was doing everything that I was saying to do.
And I want to stand corrected. Apparently the stat sheet that was passed to me was from the third quarter. The numbers are a little better than that. Mike White, 26 for 39, the lone interception, 351, 2 touchdowns, longest still 54. And Connor was 20 for 28, 1 touchdown. And the lone being 49, he threw for 276. So I want to stand corrected there. Somebody said that seemed low. It was. Somebody handed me the wrong sheet, which happens. But, no, I felt like the Hilltoppers defense was a really good defense. It just seemed like Georgia State was able to capitalize on things they saw. And in the press conference, that's what Connor Manning, the MVP, said, you know, when asked, what did you see out there? He goes, well, we ran the things we wanted to run, and when those didn't work, we were able to find a little niche or just a little thing that we could take advantage of, and that's where we got our big plays. So pretty much it was a couple big plays, and just maybe it was that confidence factor. But in no way would I say that either one of these teams are not good teams, because coming in, this was the throwaway from the first opening bowl game. ESPN showed the other 3 games. I watched about an hour of ESPN as I was getting ready to leave the hotel to go to the game, and I think it got about a 35-second explanation for the game. So to be jumped on like this, I felt like this was one of the better games, at least of the opening day. And, you know, like I said, in no way would I hang my head if I was Western Kentucky, and in no way – if I was Georgia State, would I walk around maybe it doesn't stink around here or something? This was a really good game. It just, Georgia State took advantage of some situations. And I guess that brings us to what's next for the Hilltoppers. I mean, obviously, there won't be a coaching change, because that's not a problem. You're going to graduate some of these guys. And we know signing day was today. So, obviously, they're looking to reload, right?
Yes, sir. I think the biggest hit towards this offense is going to be Mike White leaving. Mike White, you know, is a redshirt senior. He's going to be out of there. But like we said, the potential of a, you know, Heisman nominee and, you know, in the conversation for Heisman from last year to not putting up the numbers that he wanted to have this year, that's going to be a big blow. While their backup quarterback is a redshirt junior, Drew Eccles, I mean, he's came in and produced when he's needed to, but it's just not – I don't know if it's going to be the same dominance that Western Kentucky is used to with the past two quarterbacks that they've had between Brandon Dowdy and Mike White. Those were two gunslinger of a quarterbacks, but that's mainly because of the way that the offense was set around them. And their star wide receiver, Nakarius Fant, he will also be leaving as well. He's a homegrown kid from Bowling Green, Kentucky, went to Bowling Green High School. And their tight end, DeAndre Yedler, the one who made the two touchdowns for Mike White. It's going to be tough to replace these three big key offenses, you know, offensive players. But they have a lot of pride and a lot of hope in their running back, Jacarius Moses. He's a I thought I said redshirt, but he's just a freshman. I mean, he had the most rushing yards on the team on that day, and I know that's not, you know, a lot to say with 20 yards, but he had the most rushing yards on the team, and he tried to do everything that he could to make that game as close as it could be. I've been crazy at work all day today, so I haven't had a chance to check out the signings today, but Western Kentucky does a very good job of making sure they get a majority of the homegrown players that want to stay home. Otherwise, they're steadily looking down here in Florida. I mean, just looking here, practically 70% of the team was either from Florida or Kentucky. And the other 30% was either Louisiana, Alabama, or Georgia, or Tennessee. So they're staying within the, as you would say, Sun Belt Conference area to get their players. But they're just going to have to look at how they want to define their offense. I don't think that the defense was a big deal. Like you said, I think we were talking about the game changers in the Cure Bowl. And I think that the biggest game changer was just how Georgia State was able to get the momentum on their side off of one play. And I know this is like a little off, but like the one play that I was shocked. I was appalled. I was like standing up cheering for Georgia State. Like, holy crap. I've never seen a play like this in my entire life. But the double reverse flea flicker for a 42 yard, like, these are plays that I call like in, you know, backyard football. I'm like, all right, kid, you're going to run this way and then you're going to run this way and then just pass it back to me and I'm going to throw it as far as you can. And that's exactly what happened. And you could tell that the Georgia State sideline at that point in time was like, okay, look, this was just the greatest thing that we've ever been able to be a part of. We're going to make sure that we bring this home. And I think that, like you said, Connor Manning said that he was able to find certain things and execute those. And at first we were talking about how, you know, Georgia State needs to get in the red zone, and when they get in the red zone, they need to score instead of settling for field goals. And at first they were just settling for field goals, and me and you both looked at each other like, this may be the deciding factor. Like, if they can't score, this is going to be a big deal. But they were able to get into the red zone and score on all three red zone chances and just ran away with the game from there.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're talking with Mike Sigmund from WBLZ Sports. And what's next for this Western Kentucky team?
Like we said, they just have to define who they are as a football team. Head coach Mike Sanford, you know, in his first season, came out and said in the post-game press conference, and said that this loss was on him. And it's one of those things where I get that this is not his team, because we were talking about, you know, at Michigan, and John Harbaugh shouldn't be held accountable for the last 4 years, because all of the players that he has are not his recruits that he's getting in yet. So I can understand where Mike Sanford is like, okay, look, this is what I want to do. These are not the players that I can do it with, but I just have to make the best of what I can. So I think that during this offseason, during the signing period, Mike Sanford is going to do everything that he can to get the players that he wants, to build the offense that he wants, to be able to run the ball. But this, I was expecting this offense to do well because of Mike White, but I, you know, it's one of those things where I completely forgot that Western Kentucky also lost Tawan Taylor last year to the Tennessee Titans, Jeremy Lamp to the Los Angeles Chargers. They were losing some of these key players, and those were also a major key on why their offense was doing so well. But I think this year, Mike Sanford just has to figure out, okay, look, this is what we're going to do. This is how we have to execute it. And if he's unable to execute it in that standpoint, he has to look at his quarterback and say, okay, what's comfortable for you? Because you're going to be the key to the offense. So we have to make sure that if we have to throw the ball 57 times, spread the offense out for us to win games, then that's what we have to do.
Absolutely. And we're finishing up here with Mike Sigmon from WBLZ Sports and also the Pro Sports Room podcast. I know your next Pro Sports Room podcast is tomorrow night. What can we expect? What can listeners expect when they tune in?
Anything that we can talk about on Pro Sports Room, we'd like to give a talk about. Pro Sports Room is where I try to just connect with the fans on a social media level, and we talk about anything NFL, NCAA. And when the fans come in and start, you know, chatting with us and they start having their questions, we like to be able to help them. I mean, on Tuesday, just yesterday, we were talking about how we could fix the New York Jets. What is wrong with the New York Jets? How can the Jets improve? We were also talking about the Tampa Bay Bucks. Should John Gruden come back? Is Jameis Winston the actual key to that offense? What is wrong with the Tampa Bay Bucks? And it was just, we like to talk about everything that any of the other shows would like to talk about, but we want to hear from the fans and try to answer your questions just on a regular social media basis.
Well, I can give you the suggestion that on our usual Thursday podcast, it won't be on tomorrow. It was on last night for holiday reasons. But we actually tried to fix the Jets a couple of weeks ago, and our suggestion, the thing we come up with, since you're going to have probably – let's see, you'll probably have the five pick? No, six pick. Probably.
No, right now we're projected at the 10th.
Oh, that's right. You guys won those extra games.
Yeah, we're 5-9 or something like that.
I think we said you got to go get your quarterback is what we said there. And lucky for you, we gave Baker Mayfield away to Cleveland because
even though
he can handle the media, he is we said what Cleveland should do is with the one pick Saquon Barkley, with the five pick or whatever they end up with, that other second pick because of the Houston trade, that they should get Baker Mayfield as like the five pick or something at that point. So we already fixed the Browns. We're working on the Jets, but I think you guys, if it looks like Muhammad Wilkerson may be back, it seems like that's mutual. So my suggestion would be if they actually wanted to listen to it, I don't know why they wouldn't. But if they wanted to listen to it, if I was the Jets, I would go get that next Joe Namath-like guy. Even if he's not Joe Namath on the field, he needs to be the face of the team, and he needs to let Jets fans know you still need to stick with us because we're still good.
I agree. I'm not quite sure if I want to go through the draft. Like I was telling you, I want to get Kirk Cousins. I just don't want to pay the price tag for it. But
right.
It's just one of those things where I've always had crazy thoughts for quarterbacks because I love Teddy Bridgewater, and if Teddy Bridgewater was able to come over to the Jets, I mean, I would probably – it may not be the best move, but I as a fan would be perfectly happy with it. But it's just one of those things where the only missing piece on this offense is maybe another offensive line or two. Like you said about one of your Georgia State offensive linemen, just a plug-and-play guy. You know, just have him in there, solidify the offense, and then just have a quarterback because Quincy Enunwa will be back next year. Then you still have Jermaine Kearse in the at the two spot, Robbie Anderson coming off the slot, which in my opinion is a 10 times better Tavon Austin. You got two good running backs in the back. You're just the biggest issue for them is quarterback. So, and obviously defensive players, as in, you know, corners being the biggest issue, but it's one of those things where in the first round, me personally, just watching some of the film of other quarterbacks that are potentially coming out. I don't see a quarterback in the first round that I'm willing to take, but you know, that's also because I don't see what other people see as well. So, but
well, and I'll throw out these two quarterback names, just not only for the sake of this show, but we'll leave it unanswered for obvious reasons. But you know, we know that Mike White and Connor Manning are going to be available. So, Jets, you want to look up somebody we can talk about? We can tell you all about these guys. So, you know, Jets,
yes,
if you want to do that, you have our numbers.
Yes, sir.
But Mike, it's been great having you on. We'll definitely try to get you on. We'll definitely try to get you on some of the NFL stuff and all as well, because we'd love to talk NFL with you. But have a happy holidays, and I hope you and your family have a happy holidays and everything and all that applies. Have a happy new year, and we'll see you on later down the road.
Thank you very much, Jeremy. You as well. Hope you and the whole family have a great Christmas and a happy New Year's. And hopefully I'll see you next year at the AutoNation Cure Bowl.
Hey, maybe so. You know, Georgia State's been to two of the three, so maybe we're going to start to be like Michigan at the Rose Bowl back when I was a kid. But I will post up all the links to the WBLZ Sports and the Pro Sports Room podcast for everybody that wants to find those. And like I said, we will see you on later down the road. Have a good one, Mike.
You as well. Thank you.
Mike Zigman from WBLZ Sports in the Pro Sports Room podcast. He's a super guy. We had a good time at the Cure Bowl. Unfortunately, one of us had to be on the short end of the stick, and him being the Western Kentucky guy, it was him. But, you know, I've been the other side of that one as well. But Mike's a good guy. Happy to have him on. But it's going to do it. That's going to wrap it up on a Georgia State season. We're going to do some fun stuff in the off season. When we do, we will definitely post those up. And when we have other related guests on to Georgia State, we will either do standalone post, or we will bring those on as part of sports club. But we're going to do some special stuff in the off season. You guys stay tuned for that. Like I said, next week we'll be talking KSU Owls, wrapping up that season. We're going to have some fun guests as well. You guys are going to love it. But I'm Jeremy the Impact York, for Mike Sigmund, for Ben Moore, for everybody here at Impact Media. Happy holidays, Merry Christmas, all that applies. We will see you guys next week. Talk some Owls. Go Owls. Go Panthers.
Was that not clear without the bam? Yeah, okay. Bam! What?
A lot better when you win.